So why does your philosophy class suck?
So it's so I need two philosophy electives, and so there's a new one this semester called How to Think About Weird Things. Like, that's the class.
Nice.
So that sounds good, right? That sounds
Right.
fun. So, but day one, the professor is just, well, you may agree, but day one, he's basically just like aliens, ghosts, UFO, God, spirituality, like none of that shit's real, you know? And so we're just gonna teach you why people that believe in that sort of thing are dumb. And he's very smug, number one. And it's so this is the reason I brought up, I don't know if you even jumped in on it, but I think the first class is what I posted on Facebook. How did I word it? Like, do you think, oh, trying to find a good argument against the philosophical truth that there is an objective moral truth. And the argument was moral truth cannot be subjective, therefore it is objective. And I was like, that's the stupidest argument I've ever heard in my life. Like, okay, so, you know, coming from a theist point of view, I think it's objective moral truth comes from a truth giver, a lawgiver. So basically, it's like he just, so we're looking at, dude, like we're going through inductive and deductive arguments right now, and we're going through fallacies through the whole class. And so he'll give us sheets of examples of fallacies, and I swear, like every fifth one is a Bible verse. Like he straight up used let he who is without sin cast the first stone, and he called it like begging the question fallacy. And then he did C.S. Lewis's either Jesus is a lunatic, liar, or Messiah, and that was also begging the question. And I'm like, dude, this guy, bro, the audacity. So
So you're having a God, what's that movie series called? God's Not Dead. You're having like
God,
a
dude,
God's Not Dead experience.
we had this girl in my class, in our little group chat, was like, hey, you guys, it doesn't matter if you're not a believer, but come out to this event tonight, and it is straight up a God's Not Dead event, like a debate, like on the poster it says God's not dead. I wish I would have written down who the debaters were. I don't know if they were like touring or if it was people from the college, but straight up, I should have gone, man, but I had work, just to see like what they would be doing.
I don't know. I get it's weird to hear. All right, here's my hot take. I think a lot of the, and this is going to sound like an asshole thing to say, so forgive me. I think a lot of the time the kind of people that are doing like a bunch of outright Christian apologetics in spaces like that are making bad arguments. I think the people that actually have the best arguments for theodicy or like for believing in God or something like that are not the people that are out debating like new
Right.
atheist over it. It's people that are
Right.
just like, I don't have time to do these stupid conversations. I'm just going to continue on with my philosophy. You know what I
Well,
mean? And like, there's really smart people that I like that, because I mean, I'm still a theist. I believe in God. We can talk about what we mean by that, but
do you though? I, you know, you have been slipping, bro. Have
Have
I? No,
I?
I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? According to
Yeah.
who? Have I told you the weird pushes towards orthodoxy I've been getting?
No, what do you mean, like big O orthodoxy?
Yes, big O orthodoxy, like the
No.
Orthodox Church. Yeah, sorry,
Yeah.
like the so I had on the guy from the band Luxury, who is now an Orthodox priest. I think a few of the band members of Luxury became Orthodox priests. But this dude, so legit. I'm terrible at remembering his name, but go back, church, you know, Church and Other Drugs, if you want to hear that. And It was very convincing, and a bunch of people that heard it reached out and were like, that was, very interesting. I connected him to some people. And so, that was maybe a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. And recently, Andrew Shipman, who's also on my podcast, he, I think because of that and other reasons, he got Orthodox prayer book, candles, the icon of it's a specific icon for like people struggling. It's a Jesus icon of like people struggling with addictions. And he started doing Orthodox prayer 3 times a day. And he says it has like changed his life. Like he was a really anxious person. And so I looked into Orthodox churches in my areas, and there's just one. And for whatever reason, I looked at it like a year and a half ago, and it's funny how your memory is just completely wrong. But in my head, I looked it up and I thought it was like a literal, like, Spanish speaking Hispanic church. And so I was like, oh, I do want to go to that, but like, it's probably like a split language service and that might be difficult. I looked later, like, no, not at all. It's just a normal Orthodox church. I don't know where that came from. So 2 days ago, I got an email from a listener. He hadn't listened to the podcast in like 2 years. He said, like, the last episode he listened to was The Orthodox Priest. And since then, that sparked his interest in the Orthodox Church. And him and his family have been going to it, changed his life. And he was like, hey, man, I just listened to your podcast again and heard y'all talking about Andrew doing the Orthodox prayers. And he's like, it reminded me there's this priest who's awesome. I listened to, he has a podcast, and turns out he has a church in Lafayette, Louisiana. And he's like, and here's the name of the Orthodox Church. And it was the exact church that I was looking into. And I was
Nice.
like, oh crap, like maybe this is maybe I should go check that out. It was just a very odd, sequence of events, I think. I think I at least have to go check it out.
Yeah, might as well. Dude, that I remember I went to my buddy Brandon. He married, so his wife Christina is Greek. And so they got married in a Greek Orthodox church and had like a traditional Greek Orthodox service. And the church was beautiful. I walked in and my immediate response was, holy shit.
In a good
No, in a
or
good
just
way. It was beautiful. It was amazing. And
yeah.
yeah, my voice tends to travel, and we were like really the only
Oh,
people in there, so
you said that out loud.
out loud, out
Oh
loud.
my God,
Yeah.
Josh.
And so like but they were like, well, actually that's a fairly like reasonable response.
That's dude,
But
that's amazing. I thought
anyway.
you thought that, but you
Nope, I
straight
said
up said,
it
holy
out
shit.
loud.
Oh
Yeah.
man.
It was beautiful. Yeah. And
Somebody in the
I love all
corner
the
just yells,
iconography.
Amen.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like I mean, you can't see it, but there are one, two, three, four, five, six icons. I'm looking at them right now, straight in front of me on my wall. So like I'm here for all the iconography and I think actually too, I mean, you mentioned how just the participating in prayers changed your friend's life. That's I think that's a testament just to like the art and discipline of prayer in general, because like contemplative practice and stuff has been really helpful for me. And then also like within the Episcopal tradition, actually let me pull, which is the kind of church that I work for right now.
That's right. Which is Episcopal is Orthodox light or Catholic light? I forget.
So people will call them Catholic light, but Episcopalians don't like when you do that. But
Oh, I do it behind their
that's
back,
what it
dude.
is. Yeah, of course. Yeah, they're not listening. Get out of
They're
here.
not listening.
They're but they're big, prayer is big for them. And so like here, like I have a book of common prayer,
Yeah,
like the
I've got
liturgy
that
and all that kind
too.
of stuff. I'm here for it, dude. I think there's something to it.
Have you seen, and I'm suddenly, at any point, stop me and tell me which direction you want to go in. I'm suddenly all these things are coming to mind that it's just always fun to catch up with you, dude.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Have you seen how people are, I don't want to say up in arms, but how like Russell Brand is essentially like becoming a Christian, or his version of Christian, and like in his Instagram posts, he's like constantly talking about like the prayer of Assisi and talking about Christian iconography, and then people are saying that like Joe Rogan is like slowly moving towards like conservative Christianity too, and like people are super people are super pissed about it is like the weird reaction. It's the same with Kat Von D when she converted. Like people were mad, and it's a odd reaction. It really just shows how much Christianity now just means conservative Republican.
Yeah.
which right. sucks. Like that's so bad that's what it means.
Yeah, I'm looking up I'm on Russell Brand's Instagram right now looking at some of the stuff he's talking about.
Today, I think he did a video like where he's holding up a crucifixion picture or something.
Yeah, he's reading like a book called Messy Spirituality.
Yep.
The Prayer of Jabez. Okay, he can get rid of that. We don't need Russell Brand becoming a prosperity gospel person.
Is that what the Prayer of Jabez is?
I don't know if the particular book that he's reading is, but the first church that I worked at, the pastors were very into the Prayer of Jabez, and specifically for monetary gain. So,
oh, Lord.
Hopefully it's not that. But I mean, I think it's cool, dude, that people, you know, I'm not going to get mad if people want to be a Christian. I do. So my only concern would be, and this is just me being me, is like, I obviously would want people who have influence to not become a shitty version of Christianity, because then they're going to propagate that. But like, you know, I guess like what you're hinting at.
You know, what's funny is that's one of the so AA also has 12 traditions in addition to the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the 8th tradition is that we're to remain anonymous at the level of press, radio, and film. For the exact reason of you don't want to go broadcast yourself and represent the community and then act a fool, or like, you know, like, wait, you don't speak for us, buddy. So that's a pretty interesting, that's funny that you, because that's the exact reason why. I obviously don't follow that tradition, since I talk about myself as a member of AA all the time on hey, it didn't say anything about podcasts, since it was written in 1927 or whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. So I just can't be on the news reels talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, see? Stock market went up today.
Do you know who Shane Gillis is?
Yes, like, man.
Dude, that voice he just did reminds me of his special.
When the first black dude played baseball, he's like, that voice left immediately.
Yeah, he was like, that's when white people stopped being cool.
Yes. He's so good, dude. Him and Matt, do you listen to his podcast, Matt and Shane's Secret Podcast?
I haven't listened to it, no. I've just seen like his stand-up stuff.
It's basically the only one I listen to right now consistently. His buddy Matt McCusker is like equally as super funny. He has a master's in social work, but he's just a perfect foil to Shane. Like I recommend it. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah,
they're like Christian also. Like this is what you know, I do. Whatever. I like that thing where when you find out someone like is quote on your team or whatever, there's something about, I mean, that's just the it's evolutionary. It's a human thing to like people that are in your tribe. Right. But it comes, there's just, this is one of those things that reaffirms that it is real, that like something there is real, because you can just tell somehow when somebody has, at least as a foundation, you know, Christian morality or like the idea of God, the idea of a sacrificial God. It just, it really does worm its way into like everything that they do in a way that I can tell. And it's like, I knew it before I found out. And then when you find out, you're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Like there's just, is that making sense? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't know that about them.
Yeah, he's Catholic.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, he's interesting to me because I feel like he's a comedian that is able to like walk nuanced lines very well. Like I think he probably, and maybe you know more from listening to him a lot more, but to me he seems like, from like a political perspective, for example, he leans a bit more to the left. However, he is capable of making jokes about everybody and like, or making jokes that are nuanced that like don't really fit any kind of particular category. Like, I think he's actually smart and is capable of making like some pretty high level jokes. Yeah. And I heard, like, I learned recently too, like, I guess he owns a coffee shop that is employs people with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And his bit about it is funny too. About how right, they're just like, can they come into work and like, I fucking hate this place.
Oh, dude. Man. That's what's up, man. But,
So I'm trying to. My first time on Rethinking Faith.
Yeah, which is crazy because I feel like I've done church and other drugs like what, like 3-4 times, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I was gonna say 4 or 5. Yeah,
4 or 5.
Quite a few.
Nice. Yeah, and I'm trying to think where I first. I think the first time I heard you on anything was you did a bit like. Years ago, this was over 3 years ago with Dan Koch on You Have Permission. Like you did an episode and kind of walked through like your whole story.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I heard of you and then, you know, got connected to church and other drugs and the stuff you were doing.
Yeah. I don't remember. What was the show called before?
Theology Doesn't Suck.
Yes. That's I, you know, there's that thing. Of like going through and like finding out all the other similar podcasts. And I guess that's, or you were a bad Christian guy too, though, weren't you? Or were you not?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I absolutely, okay. I mean, I still am. They just don't, well, you know, they just don't call it that anymore, but.
Right.
Yeah.
that may have been how.
Boom, look at that. Then, look at that laptop sticker there.
That's OG. That is an OG bad Christian. And yeah, back then you were a Christian preacher before you went full heathen.
Full heathen. You went,
you never go full Rob Bell. You know, everybody knows that. Never go full Rob Bell. Isn't it funny? So in the same way that if you go back and watch, like, There's Something About Mary, for instance, and when I was a kid, that might as well have been rated NC-17 with how raunchy that was. And by today's standards, you could show that on like daytime television and it would be like the tamest thing you see all day. In that same way, Rob Bell, back then, it's like, oh my God, this dude is. He is burning in hell as we speak. And yet now it's like, oh, all he said was people might not go to hell. And, and we were like, oh my God, this is the Numa guy. I remember youth group, his videos, dude, we worshiped that dude. And then overnight just dumped him like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah,
so
isn't it
crazy?
It's interesting, dude, because it's like it reminds me too when I like go back and look through old episodes or I like look at my bookshelf and see and be like, dude, I remember when I thought that this episode was edgy and like pushing the line And now I go back and I'm like, oh, this is cringy.
Yeah.
Like, this is not even edgy. Like, it's weird. It's
I've
a weird
got a
experience.
very weird. I've got, because I've been doing it, this is my 7th year, and I've got, my friend Katie is, she started listening at episode 1. So she, her thing now is she texts me every time she gets to a part where I talk about how I'm never going to have kids or I'm scared to have kids. And because I just had a daughter, she's 4 months old. And so every time she's like, this is hilarious because like you are so petrified of having a child. And I bring it up a lot apparently, which is very funny.
That is funny.
It'll be funny for her to listen to it one day. Like, think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be
She'll
crazy.
that'll be very crazy. She'll have to be 26 before I let her listen to some of this stuff, man.
Like, guess what? When daddy was younger,
Oh
he used to
no.
say stuff on the internet all the
Yeah, he didn't have a brainwave transmitter like we do. Like, what an idiot.
What a loser. He did
What a loser.
podcasts.
Right.
Dude,
Oh
that's.
man.
I kind of want to go back now. Just give me an idea. I want to go back and find the very first time I had Tom Ord on my podcast, which would have been fairly early on. So, I mean, this would have been Rethinking Faith's been around 5 years in October. So, however long that is now. So, he came on within the first couple months. He was one of the first, like, big, scholars, theologians that agreed to come on. I want to hear myself think about open and relational theology from that version of Josh compared to Josh now.
Was he your intro to that?
Yes.
Wow. And so you were my intro to it. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's fun. And now I'm having you got me in touch with Greg Boyd, who I'm obsessed
Woohoo!
with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm gonna be starstruck, dude. I have so many freaking questions, dude. I'm gonna wear them out.
You'll like him. He's a lot of fun.
So your Thomas Ord would be my Michael Heiser. So he was the one, and Nate, this is so, there's a lot of coincidences today. Nate from Blurry Creatures, I promise you, just texted me about an hour and a half. We were talking, but the last thing he said to me was, man, thanks again for introducing me to Mike Heiser. It changed my life, which it did. And now he's got the freaking like number 5 podcast. Like, his podcast is rated over Neil deGrasse Tyson's.
Wow. That's pretty sweet.
It's huge. It's huge. And yeah, and in part because like he got on the Divine Council worldview, I guess, is what it's that branch of theology, I guess, is referred to now. And my dad actually just started reading The Unseen Realm by Michael Heiser. And
Nice. You're out here converting everybody, Jed.
well, and if Rethinking Faith listeners will remember, my dad and you came on to debate. Remember that? We did a debate about predestination, I think, because he's a Calvinist.
Oh, geez, that would have been forever ago. Yeah,
Forever
I
ago.
forgot
Yeah.
about that. I did I do bad?
No, and my dad's a tough walnut to crack. I think he thought about it. There is something to be said for, I guess I grew up Calvinist. There is something to be said about the security of knowing that you are chosen, right?
Oh yeah,
I
absolutely.
mean,
I don't think so. I think Calvinism is wrong, but I think that the system is pretty airtight. I just disagree with it wholeheartedly. But if you, I think it can provide certainty and comfort, and like, a lot of good for people. I mean, it doesn't work for me. But
yeah.
like, I don't want to take that, like, I don't want to take that away from somebody, right? I very much disagree. Yeah, I don't
So
know. Certainty is important. Some people like, yeah.
Why do you think, like, would you say that your spiritual process really has just been the process of losing certainty? Like, you wouldn't say that you're certain of anything right now, would you? Or you could
Yeah,
quote Aaron Weiss and say, "I'm certain of this, that no uncertainty exists."
I don't know. It'd be pretty hard. I definitely have things that I believe firmly. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I have any kind of certainty. Yeah. I don't think so.
What
I
would you even
don't
like? Yeah,
know.
that's the thing. And it's, but we used to, not that long ago, we were.
Absolutely.
And do you feel better now or then?
All right, dude, this is like a whole Matrix thing. Like, do you want to know the truth or not? Kind of get bit.
Yeah, very, I know, but
So there are, I mean,
assume.
there are. Yeah, there's definitely times when I think back and it was like, oh, it's so much easier when Josh was just like, an evangelical of the NT right flavor. So I was like a bit of an edgy evangelical.
Can we
Like that
coin emojelical as, can we, co yes,
emojelical, that has to be a
I
new
am
thing.
coining that.
Do it.
We were
Do it.
emojelicals.
Emojelicals. And I don't know how that's not on a fucking t-shirt yet. That's we're it's gonna
Boom.
happen.
Yep.
All right, well, we're having a conversation about that after this conversation. It's gonna
Okay.
happen. Emojelicals. But yeah, as an emojelical, I don't know if I ever had certainty, dude. When I'm thinking back, I don't know that I ever really had true certainty. I had things that I thought were true, but I was always questioning something, and that might be about my personality. Like,
Same.
yeah, I don't know.
I mean, think back to when you preached, where you're certain, and I don't know, so this is literally me asking and digging. So, like, did you profess from some sort of foundational certainty, or were your sermons the questioning type?
I did have a lot of doubt baked into my sermons, but I think that's just because I brought myself when I preached. Like, I was always very much myself. But I did, I mean, I definitely would I would preach. Like, there was at the last church that I worked at, Seneca Creek, there was what I liked to refer to as the Amen Corner. And it was just, the church was super diverse. People from a lot of different religious like upbringings, but also like ethnically diverse. Like it was in Montgomery County, which is a super diverse area, and so we had people from all different like countries. It was really cool. It was beautiful. And so there was like a section of people that had a more Pentecostal bend to them, and so when I would preach, the Amen Corner would get fired up, and that would fire me up. Like I loved that. I would play into that so much. But that was more so, I feel like, tapping into the prophetic aspect of preaching. I preached a, yeah, I think when I preached, I did a lot of that. I did a lot of like the kingdom of God, which is still something I cling to. I don't like calling it the kingdom of God anymore, but I did a lot of kingdom of God stuff, and I did a lot of Jesus center stuff. So like maybe one of my more certain foundations was the Jesus thing. Like that's probably the last thing that ever got touched by like deconstruction or whatever you want to call it, was my understanding of Jesus. Like doing historical Jesus stuff scared the shit out of me.
Okay, go. I'll bite. Like, what do you mean? Like, it's the things you found out scared you, or they.
Yeah, I never my certainty didn't hinge, or my sense of authority didn't hinge on the Bible. I was my thing was like the word of God is authoritative and he like lived for 33 years and wore sandals kind of thing. So I would do like that kind of twist on things, right?
Like the word of God is Christ, not
It's Jesus, not the Bible. Yeah. And so for me, questioning the Bible, like that was one of the things I did very early on, right? Like I remember we had Pete Enns on, and my co-host like felt the need to distance himself from Pete Enns publicly, which was hilarious.
Like he just made a statement like Pete Enns does not represent the
Yes, and like Pete was like, dude, what the fuck is that all about? And which is hilarious. So and this is interesting, Jed. You have me thinking in real time. The Bible was never a sort like that never scared me, questioning the Bible, looking into how the Bible works, this kind of stuff. But that thing for me where my faith hung was Jesus. So the kind of anxiety that some people have with the Bible, I feel like I have with the person of Jesus. And so I was like, oh, did Jesus actually say the stuff that's in the Bible? Like, I never questioned if Jesus like actually existed. I think the arguments that like Jesus never walked the earth are stupid. I think it's rather axiomatic that there was a person named Jesus of Nazareth.
That's a $10 word right there. Bam! What does that mean?
It means obvious, or like everybody agrees upon it. Yeah. Nice. It's fun to slide in. Axiomatic.
Axiomatic. I'm going to use that in a very inappropriate class. I will. Excuse me, professor. Would you say it's axiomatic that...
Yeah, exactly. Man. Just contradict whatever you just said.
I don't even really allow myself to... Maybe I should as an exercise. I don't like going down the street of, wait a minute, like, what if, like, this is just a cult? Like, what if I just bought into a cult? And what if, like, why? Yeah, what if, you know, this, the same reasons the Jews killed him, like, what if, like, that's, yeah, what if this is just a, he was just another, this is just another Jim Jones. This is just another David Koresh. This is another Joseph Smith. That like these people just said these things. How do I know that's right? What if? And then I think Dan brought it up. It's like, okay, well, what do I lose believing this? And what would I gain if I don't believe it? And I guess this is where my addiction part comes into play is, you know, there's that, you know, Penn and Teller or Penn always, I think his quote was, God, dude, him and Ricky Gervais, just like, okay, dude, shut up. I get it, dude. You don't believe in God. Like, cool. They counter that famous argument of, if I didn't believe in God, then like you just rape and murder people. And he's like, well, that just makes you a bad person. Like that, everybody knows that like argument. For me, there kind of is a very real boundary line set. It's a very tough thought experiment. But I don't know that I even would have tried to get my life back on track if I did not believe that the things that I did had eternal consequence and that I was disobeying or not living a life that my creator wanted to. Because otherwise, why not? Like, you know, I get the arguments of like, oh, well, like maybe you wanted a better life. But man, when I was in the thick of it, I didn't. Dude, I did not care. I was just going for the flesh, dude. And you can get to some, I'm here to tell you that you can get to some unbelievable places, like heaven on earth, if you want to call it. Like you can go get that. There's some insane experiences you can have if you want. And if I didn't think that that was like, not the good thing, I don't think I would have left, right? So so for me, I guess there are very real consequences of not believing. And then once I get back from that road, this is a very long rabbit hole. Once I get back from that line of thinking, I arrive back at, there is whatever you want to call belief or intuition or feeling or spiritual experience. I cannot escape that. I cannot get away from, oh no, this is real. That is the truth. You know, Christ is God. And that's just, and there we go. So I can kind of stop worrying about that. Oops, that was loud.
Yeah. It's all good. Yeah. But yeah. No, I don't think that there's anything wrong with having like certainty or a box per se. Right. So, or maybe I'll put it this way. Richard Rohr has this bit about like the first half of life, second half of life. That's a metaphor. It's arbitrary. And his whole thing is like, you need to, like, a container is helpful. Like, it's important. There, like, especially, I mean, you're talking about recovery from addiction. Having like this strict container was good for you. And like, maybe it still continues to be good for you. So I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. Like, having that strict container is helpful. But I think for me, there comes a time when the container is helpful until it's not. And so for me, the container stopped being helpful. And so then you kind of like break out of the container, and then you recognize that you're now in another container, and then you can break out of that one, et cetera. But I think for me, it's kind of more so like learning the rules in order to know how to break them properly. Right. Is kind of, you know, where I think, does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And the immediate thing that came to mind was new wine, new skins. And that's
that kind very of thing,
funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, man, maybe they know what they're talking about. And you are someone. So I also do a lot of reliance on other people that have done the footwork that I'll be honest, I'm probably not going to do. You know,
sure.
you are way more red than I am. Pete Enns is way more red than I am. Probably my biggest theological influence is Philip Yancey.
Yeah, I know Philip Yancey. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know him?
No, not like Philip is my neighbor, so cool. And I hang out with him.
Oh, man.
But like, I know I've read Philip Yancey books before.
Yeah, his whole angle on grace. And then he and a doctor wrote a book called Fearfully and Wonderfully Made about just basically like using physiology to demonstrate like how ridiculously complex God's design is. Man, his book, I actually like spread it through prison. Like, it's so my mom sent me What's So Amazing About Grace, and what was the other one she sent me? Maybe Where Is God When It Hurts? But for sure, What's So Amazing About Grace, that's probably his most famous book. And dude, that book circulated my prison pod, and like I remember this dude. I wonder where he is at today. But this, like, I don't know, 45-year-old black dude, and he just came back up to me and was like, dude, this was like amazing. And he was like, can I get the other ones when you're done? I was like, yeah, dude, just keep it going. And it got passed around. So I don't know what that side note was about, but yes, you are way more red than I am. And so you do, you know the fundamentals, so you can play jazz. And I kind of, that's why I survey people like you to kind of, it's in some ways it's reassuring. In some ways it's not defeating, but it's like, man, you know all this stuff, and then that's where you landed on. So it's like, wait a minute. Maybe you know too much.
Perhaps. I often wonder that. but like I think there's like, experience matters, dude. Like and I think this is an important point. Like, obviously in all of my readings and studying and all that kind of stuff, I bring myself to it. My life experiences, all that kind of stuff, vastly different than yours. Like, dude, I've smoked weed like 10, 15 times maybe, and two of the times I thought I was Cheech and Chong and got way too high, way too fast. One time had a spiritual experience. The other time I passed out and my wife thought I was dying.
Oh, man.
So, like, I don't know. I think the life experience matters as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's going to influence who we read and what we find meaningful and helpful and things like this. And so, like, I mean, I don't have the experience of, like being incarcerated or like struggling with addiction. The closest thing to addiction I have is like, I'm probably an alcoholic. and that's an addiction. So it's not like, you know,
So Josh like, it's like the closest thing to addiction is I smoke crack, but that's it.
Yeah, it's the closest thing. It's not that big of a deal.
I just like the way cocaine smells. That's it.
Yeah.
like, and
but
it,
so I
it
don't
all,
know, maybe that has something to do with, I don't know,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
It does for sure. And then I guess this is the purpose of the body analogy, right? Where
yeah,
it takes all these different flavors, and I guess I need to. So me, you, and Dan had a discussion about polytheism. Is that right?
Religious pluralism.
Religious pluralism. Thank you.
Yeah.
The axiotal of religious. Is that, yeah. Is that the word?
It's rather axiomatic.
Axiomatic.
That pluralism is ubiquitous in today's society.
So religious pluralism, what I never got to ask was like, okay, So like Wiccan and pagan and witchcraft, so that stuff is also legit. It's we are in this weird time of people like Russell Brand and Duncan Trussell. We're mixing, like, you know, psychedelic religious experiences with Buddhism, with Taoism, with dark, you know, all this stuff into this mishmash. And I think the only separation I really see is where people are either seeking all their answers from within or seeking their answers from a divine source. I guess that's the distinction. And all I really want to know, and I'll quote Me Without You, Aaron Weiss, is, you know, you abide in me and I abide in you, but what exactly should I do? That's kind of my thing. It's like, so what do I need to be doing? Like, I guess I think too wide angle lens, and I really just need to bring it back down to a day to day. And I'm a father now, so maybe that's all I need to do. Like, I don't know. Legalism still plagues me, where I think, that I didn't pray it. You know, I told you and Dan that. I was like, dude, I worried that I didn't pray over my unborn daughter enough. And so it's like, she's not going to, you know, it's, dude, just tell me what to do, Rabbi.
I'm still trying to figure out what to do too, Jeb. I think so one thing I want to hit on before I talk about what to do, I'll do my best, but is that I think part of your concern, and I think it's a good one with the religious pluralism stuff, is like, you don't want to fall into some kind of just like relativism. And like, I agree with you. I don't want that either. And also too, because I think relativism very easily can become, I don't know, it can look nice, but you can be some kind of like, believe in religious pluralism, be an inclusivist, and like, just be like, oh, all religions are the same. It doesn't really matter. But then in a weird way, that's kind of like, can have some like colonial vibes to it, because what you're saying is like, my religion's the right one and everybody secretly is a part of it. They just don't know, which I think does violence to other traditions. It's not fair. And it doesn't recognize other traditions for what they are. So like, I don't know. I want to affirm that relativism is bad. And the kind of religious pluralism that I'm interested in doesn't want to relativize things, but actually recognize different religious traditions for what they are on their own terms, and then seek conversation from a place of humility and seeking mutual transformation. How, you know, what can I learn from these different things? And there's different ways that, you know, scholars who do like comparative theology of religion and this kind of stuff, how they talk about this in a way that's not relativistic. You know, some people, like within the process tradition, you have people saying that there's multiple religious ultimates. Maybe there's five of them. And it's not that there's more than one God. These are just like five different faces of or something like that. You have someone like John Tutominal, who's a Christian, and he's like, I understand that multiple ultimate things is helpful, but I'm a Christian. I'm going to stick with the Trinity. And basically, he does his religious pluralism from a Trinitarian perspective, where it's like these different religious experiences are interacting with different aspects of God, or something like that. And so it's like the mountain there. So you could say maybe they're like Raymond Poniker did this analogy of like, you know how some people say, oh, it's just one mountain. Everyone's climbing the same mountain. Mm-hmm. Well, Poniker was like, well, maybe, but the mountain, like all sides of the mountain are different. The paths are different. The geography is different. It's so he kind of like flips the analogy a bit. So it's not equating everything to be the same. Yeah, I don't know. So I all that to say, I want to affirm you and be like, yeah, relativism sucks and we shouldn't do that. and so I'm, yeah, but I like religious pluralism for pragmatic reasons. I think that if religions can't talk to each other and get along, then we're just going to keep fucking bombing each other. And I think that's not great.
Yeah.
So I'm pushing for it because I think there are pragmatic benefits to it. Yeah. And I mean, I am a process person. I'm still figuring out which flavor of religious pluralism I like best, but it's what I'm studying right now in my master's thesis. But anyway,
wait, you're that's still, that what's bit. I didn't know you were still in school. Why didn't I know that?
I've been like kind of, I mean, I've talked about it, but I haven't been like blasting it or advertising it too much. But yeah, I'm working on my master's thesis now where I'm writing about religious pluralism and the nuns, N-O-N-E-S.
What's your master's in?
So I'm going to have a master's in specialized ministry. And that's where the religious pluralism and the nuns come in. That's what I'm choosing to specialize in, if you will. So it's a ministry degree, which is odd because I don't necessarily, I'm not trying to like be a pastor or anything, but there's a doctoral program that I want to do. And in order to do that, you need a master's degree. So I'm playing the game.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
You just got to get some letters behind your name and then all of a sudden you have authority. It's so sick.
Right. It's
and this
weird.
This is a real quick side note, but I have spent enough time working with like MDs and LPCs and like to know that about half of them are the biggest idiots I've ever met in my entire life. They just do not know what they're talking about, but they will say it with such conviction, or it's like they're stuck in whenever they graduated, that's the only thing that they think is true anymore. And it's just like, God, dude. Oh, it's nobody knows what they're doing. That's the summary of that is nobody know what's going on.
I'm about to turn 30 and like in my brain I was like, oh yeah, everybody by the time they're 30 they have their shit together, they know what's going on. And then I'm like, I don't think that's true.
No, dude. I'm 36 and I'm still working on my undergrad, dude.
Yeah.
It's all good, bro.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. The funny thing about going back to college after you've been in the workforce is all the kids in college are like, I cannot wait until I graduate and get a job. And I'm like, hey, listen, it sucks. Like, yeah, take your time, bro. I've been there. I've been in them streets and it sucks. Just stay here. Yeah.
It's like the quote from Billy Madison where the kid's like, I wish I could go to high school, Billy. He like grabs his face. He's like, stay.
As long as, don't you ever say that. Stay as long as you can. Yeah. So what should we do? Just, do we just default to, love God? The AA default is, help others clean house and love God is the default. And I guess that's pretty much it. Love your neighbor, love God, and protect, visit people in prison, help the widows and orphans. And that's always interesting that visiting the people in prison was, I'd like to do a deep dive on that, about why that was part of the thing, part of the edict.
Yeah. That's a good question.
I guess it was just that common.
Yeah, I don't know. We could hit up like a New Testament scholar, someone like James McGrath. Yeah. He'd be fun to talk to.
Or it might have been like, I think I'm gonna write that down, James McGrath. It might be because in some South American prisons too, like you don't, if your family doesn't come bring you, if you don't have someone come bring you food and stuff, like you don't eat. So it's like,
that might
be the thing.
Yeah, it could be very pragmatic.
Yeah. Jeff, who? What was his name?
Oh, James McGrath.
Oh.
He has a new book out recently. I'm trying to see. It's not on my desk anymore. But it's called The A to Z of the New Testament. It's like things that experts know that you should know too. And it's really great. It's like probably one of the better introductions to the New Testament book I've ever read. He just like each chapter attacks like a different issue, and it's just like, hey, this is the kind of conversations that are happening in the academy around the New Testament, and you should know about them. James is awesome. He's also a super nerd, like he will awesome. Claim that happily, and by nerd I mean like geek nerd, like Star Trek. Yeah. like came to beer camp with a new Star Wars or Star Trek shirt every day, like that kind of guy.
That's
which
awesome.
By the way, I'm campaigning for you to come to Theology Beer Camp this year. I know, like, as unless it would be something that would put you in harm's way, but
no, absolutely,
like,
no.
There's an AA group that meets at beer camp. A lot of people don't often know about that. We're going to try to intentionally promote that more this year, so people are aware that, like, you don't have to come and drink beer. It's really a way to screen out the kind of people that are like, theology and beer, you can't do that. It's more so like,
yeah,
okay, you know what I mean? There's an AA group that meets. It'd be cool.
And I would love
Dan
to,
will be there.
Like, yeah, I would love to like be a part of the AA thing too. With the child, I don't know if I can go this year,
it's
but
a challenge,
it is
right.
I do want to go, you know, and I feel like Church and Other Drugs should be on the panel. That's just what I'm saying. I think so.
We can make it happen.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe not this year, but next year.
Word.
Well,
dude, so we're going to do the, well, actually, are you good on time? What's your?
Yeah, I got a little bit left.
Okay. I was going to say, I wanted to say something about Jesus because you were talking about that.
Yeah.
And let you in a little bit on Josh's current personal experience of Jesus, and then try to do the, what do we do thing.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yep. We can do that.
So this book, I think you would like it. It's called The Wood Between the Worlds. It's by Brian Zond, and it's very pretty. You can see the nice, beautiful cover. But it's, the subtitle is A Poetic Theology of the Cross. I'm going to have Brian on the podcast soon. I'm interviewing him next week. And this book is about atonement. And I haven't read anything about atonement. I haven't thought about atonement in a very long time. And I've had a really interesting experience reading this book because it makes me deeply uncomfortable. And yet at the same time, it's exciting and I like it. There's this tension that I'm finding within myself where he'll like start laying the foundations of like what he's about to say, like building his argument. And the intellectual side of me will be like, oh, come on, Brian, like whatever, dude. But then the thing that he says, the implication of what he said, I'm like, amen, yes, I'm here for it. Let's do it. And so I think, and more recently too, I've been embracing more of this like idea of theopoetics, which is recognizing that like essentially like theology is like poetry. And so when you ask like, is a poem true? You're interacting with it in a different way, right? So looking at theology in that way and getting more comfortable using like talking like with Christian language, and not having to cross my fingers because it's like the implications I'm here for. Does that make sense? There's this tension and I've been wrestling with it. And so I'm getting more and more comfortable again using Jesus type language.
Nice.
And engaging like in a way that's different. I just mean different things now. So yeah, with the Jesus stuff.
You'll mean different things next year.
Absolutely. And next month probably.
Yeah.
But
and I guess that's something that's probably something I'll kind of bring up with Greg is like, so do you, I guess everybody is constantly changing, but I do wonder if he kind of has a landing pad that he's kind of at right now where like, you know, as you get older, I mean, like biochemically, you do become set in a way. You stop getting, so like when you, just quick little neuroscience, when you're a teenager, you get way more dopamine responses for trying new things as an evolutionary exercise to get you to do more things. And as you're older, the dopamine responses become much less. So like, that's why you can't teach an old dog new tricks, is because there's literally no reward to learn new things from your brain anymore. So the advice for aging people is to like play video games or something like that to try and keep your reward system active. So that was just a quick brain thing.
Good to know. Well, actually, I was, here's an ADHD tangent. I got this book in the mail today, Open and Relational Theology and Its Social and Political Implications, Muslim and Christian Perspectives. And I was like, oh, cool. So I was looking through it. And then I was surprised to find that Greg Boyd wrote a chapter for it.
What?
Yeah, it's called A Call for a United Faith Response to Our Current Climate Crisis. Greg Boyd.
It's a Muslim perspective on open theology?
Muslim and Christian perspectives. So it's bringing together Muslim and Christian scholars, and they're talking about open relational theology and its social and political implications. Yeah, that's good stuff.
That's super interesting.
Yeah. There's an example of religious pluralism at work. Cool. All right. So what do we do?
Yes.
Ah, man. So for me, I still find myself animated by the teachings of Jesus. And with this theopoetic stuff, I am becoming more and more comfortable not needing like the kind of, yeah, but if you were at Jesus's tomb and you had a video camera, would you capture Jesus stepping out of the, you know, that kind of thing. Leaving that, like, it's difficult. It's a process that I'm in. But leaving that way of thinking behind and embracing, still embracing the message of Jesus as a good thing. And I think, I mean, that's what I try to do. And I try to live into, you know, acknowledge like Practice of the Presence is a famous book by a Christian mystic. And I try to live into that every day, which simply is recognizing that, you know, as often as you can throughout your day, whenever you can remember, remind yourself that you are in the presence of God. And then like whatever you're doing, do that as if that's the case. So it's like, if I'm washing these dishes, I'm going to wash the fuck out of these dishes for Jesus or something.
Yeah.
Or
No,
like whatever.
that's good.
Yeah, whatever it might be. But also, the thing that's been the most helpful for me, and this comes from an amalgamation of things, but a lot of my process leanings and also what I've learned from Buddhism is the kind of, I've talked to you about it before, the myth of separation and not giving into it. So recognizing that I am not separate from you. So like the big myths are that I'm separate from my neighbor, I'm separate from creation, I'm separate from God, and I'm separate from myself. And I think that's where sin arises from, is when we buy into these myths of separation. So like when I believe that I'm separate from Jed, I can dehumanize you, I can beat you up, I can cheat you, I can be racist, whatever. When I believe I'm separate from creation, we get the climate crisis, right? Like, I don't think there's much to that has to be said in that regard. When I believe I'm separate from the divine, we get shitty theology, we get cults, we get religions killing each other because they feel like they figured it out or something like that. And when we believe that we're separate from ourselves, then, dude, I mean, all sorts of mental health crises and these kind of things. So I think for me, salvation is the recognition, the awakening to the realization that all things are deeply interconnected and interrelated. And so when I know that and believe it, when I hear Jesus say something like, "What you do unto the least of these, you do unto me," I believe that in a way that's like pretty literal.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And if I cause
yeah.
harm to you, I'm causing harm to myself. And at the same time, when I better myself, I'm also bettering the whole. It's not.
And so that's I need that to be true. And I
Yeah.
because well, the part about sin separating me from God. 'Cause that is where I will think that, and I guess it's a careful line, but it's like I will think that if I am sinning sometimes willfully, that I cannot come before God, or I cannot expect God to do anything good for me. I can't expect any kind of blessing because I'm just willfully disobeying God. So, like, what would you say to that?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that with the whole separation thing, I think it's metaphysically impossible, but I think we can separate ourselves from the divine in our minds. And because so for me as a process person, right? This is how I'm gonna have to talk about it because it's my understanding and context. I believe that God is present in and through all things at all times, alluring creation forward into things that are good and beautiful and true. And so in each moment, God is calling us into all of those things. And we as humans have the ability to either give in to that divine lure or ignore it. And a lot of the times we ignore it, like what you're saying, when we willfully go against the divine lure. And so for me, all right, and so within that process perspective, what happens is God takes in to God's self each moment of becoming. So, like as we, yeah, this is kind of hard to explain, but since if you know, time is pictured a timeline moving forward, God is in time with us, and each moment of becoming in creation, God takes into God's self, right? And so
Okay.
God is taking in like this conversation is now objectively a part of the divine forever and will have influence on God. So when we do dumb stuff, God takes that into God's self, is not overcome by it, valuates it, and then offers us the next best possibility in the next moment of becoming. Now that's going to change if we do stupid shit, right? Like, because you can see how our, if we continue to do stupid shit, our ability or our access to something really good in the next moment is going to be different than somebody who's constantly doing something great, right? For example, like if you're someone who is a serial killer and you're constantly murdering people, your next best possible thing in the next moment is going to be different than, say, like the monk that like sits around and prays all day and blah 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 blah. But God is gracious and still meets that serial killer in each moment of becoming, valuates their past, gives something that's good and beautiful and true in front of them in each moment of becoming, and they can either give into it or they don't. But regardless of what they do with it, God takes it into God's self, valuates it, and then again in the next moment gives you something good and beautiful and true. And that's
That,
called grace in the
that's a good
Christian
that's a
faith. It's
good
called grace.
amen. Holy shit, that's a
Yeah.
good breakdown. Okay, I'm gonna take that and chew on it.
So the separateness, maybe it's not there, but we can choose to do middle fingers to God, right?
Yeah.
And so what makes someone like Jesus so freaking cool is that Jesus gives into that divine lure in each moment of becoming, to the point where Jesus literally becomes the image of the invisible God. Because Jesus is so in tune with the divine will that Jesus is imaging God in creation. Boom. Because he's fucking nailing it. Like, if
Yeah,
you and I,
pun intended.
if you and I are at like maybe like a 4 or 5, right? In like how good we are on any given day, you know, responding to the divine
Yeah.
lore, Jesus was up to 11.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom. All right. Sorry. There's my, and that's my
That's good. I
process,
like it. That's a good.
Jesus process sermon.
That is a good place to wrap, dude. As
Yes, sir.
always,
Well, dude,
amazing talk.
yeah, it was fun having you on. I we'll have to do it again.
Yes.
And yeah, it was sick. Church and Other Drugs, as we've mentioned, is your podcast. I'll
Yep.
be sure to link it and all that kind of stuff. But is there anything else you want people to know about?
No,
Places to
that's
send them?
yeah, my you know, I do art as well, and I got prints that are for sale. It's all Instagram, jed.i.am. Go check it out. And then yeah, church and other drugs.
Sick.
Yeah.
Sweet, dude. Well, thanks again for hanging out. Listeners, as always, go in peace, guys.